C2M. Number 2A.
So we saw yesterday that Mrs. Eddy, in the introductory paragraph, says that marriage is a concession, just as Jesus made certain concession under certain circumstances. But they always must be concessions for the advancement of spiritual good. And that is the criterion that tells us when such concessions are necessary and should be made. Marriage is therefore a transitionary period, a concession to the human race, as we have seen. And I just want to read a few statements from miscellaneous writings that bring out that very point. There are just one or two sentences, so I am not going to bore you with reading references. But here is a very good one. She says, until time matures human growth. So it's always that until. And we see that is a transitionary stage. Until time matures human growth, marriage and progeny will continue unprohibited in Christian Science. We look for future generation. Now she looks into the future. Until when? So we look for future generation for ability to comply with absolute science. So here she compares, therefore, Christian Science with absolute Christian Science. When marriage shall be found to be man's oneness with God. When we see marriage is actually the marriage that was shown in John the Revelator, the marriage of man's oneness with God, the unity of eternal love. So we see the range within which marriage is actually developing. It starts with a concession to the material age and develops until at the end of the concession is when we grow to the spiritual unity with eternal love. Or she says, wisdom in human action begins with what is nearest right. Can you see, not with what is absolute right. Usually in many situations we cannot do what is absolutely right, and so wisdom says, well, do that which is nearest right under the circumstances, and thence achieves the ultimate, and from there go on and achieve the ultimate. Again, the same idea. Or the offspring of an improved generation. So she speaks about really the mortal generation, the human generation, however, will go out before the forever fact that man is eternal and has no human origin. So we can see until we believe that we have a human origin, until we stick to the fact that we are the children of material parents, until then we have not achieved the ultimate. Therefore, we still believe in human origin and therefore have to work out the human existence. But that is only until really we see that we are not, that our Creator is God, divine mind, the parent mind, and not really our parents. And this is something that we can start right away, something that we should really start as early as possible, to see that we are never born of human parents, that that which is true within ourselves has a divine origin. I always did that right from my years at the university when I began to see something about obstetrics that I claimed for myself going down to the university or so. Always, I'm not from my parents. I had wonderful parents, by the way, but I did not accept that I'm the outcome of those parents, that my origin is in divine science and that divine science ushered me into human being, and therefore that I'm an idea of divine science and not a corporeal being, not something that has hereditary traits from human parents. And you have to start right away there to find out that we have a divine origin and claim that divine origin. In that way, we can come to that point where we feel that we have never been born and therefore never die. And that's then the resurrection, in which there is no more marrying and no more giving into marriage, but where man is like the angels of God. So, also when we compare, for instance, the beginning and the end of the chapter, we can see the whole range from where it starts and to where it goes. Namely, at the beginning, we see that she says that marriage is the legal and moral provision for generation, for the propagation of human species. That's the beginning. At the end, it is absolutely different. There, human generation ceases, she says, and man, coexistence with God, will appear. So this is the range, and we can see it is really that which is our personal problem. Each one of us is within that range. Each one of us has to handle the claim that we are born, that we are a propagation of mortals, and have to arrive at the point where we see our eternal coexistence with God. This is our life work. Now, let's consider what the chapter on marriage wants to epitomize within the whole structure of the textbook as the third chapter. In order to see what the third chapter is, we always have to go back to the first and second, because we see that these chapters have a spiritual order, an order that makes divine logical sense, and therefore we have also to see the development that runs through this three chapter. We had, and perhaps you can take just for one moment this big chart here, this big one which you have, and afterwards we can lay it away for quite a while. But there you see, I have tried to give an overall view of that, what is in the epitome book, those epitomes for the chapter and then for the main subject, which are printed in the epitome book in bold letters. So on this chart you have nothing else but what is already in the epitome book, but just seen in a survey. We have there the word chapters, and therefore four big columns, namely prayer, second atonement and Eucharist, and marriage, and afterwards Christian Science versus spiritualism. We only take the first three chapters and reason out the line of spiritual development from chapter to chapter. Only the title of the chapter, which is on the first horizontal line, subject of chapter, you have there at the left margin. And there we have the epitome which we try to formulate for the whole of prayer, and then for atonement and Eucharist, and then for marriage. And we can see here the following development. We saw that prayer is a spiritual understanding of God, which through unselfed love brings us into unity with the perfect nature of God. So we could see there very clearly the Word as the Word, namely the nature of God as God is. That's the Word in the absolute sense. In the relative sense, it is our approach to it. It is that which brings us into unity with God. Can you see it is a relative standpoint and shows that the way how we can become one with God. Then the chapter shows through the seven main subjects those qualities which enable us to become one with God. Then comes the second chapter, which says what happens when we are one with God. So we have through man's unity with God, see that has to be achieved through prayer, through man's unity with God. That's really the whole content of prayer that has brought us into unity with God. So through man's unity with God, what happens? The moment we touch God, God touches us. That's the Christ. So the Christ says, we overcome all that is unlike God in ourselves. So we hear here the tone very clearly, namely always God coming to man is the Christ, the Christ message from God to man, coming to the flesh to achieve something in the flesh, namely to overcome all that which is unlike God. So we had this ascending and descending view here of the Word and the Christ. And so we can say when the Christ begins to overcome everything within us, and I said begins to overcome because it doesn't overcome in 1 second the whole mortal, or else we would disappear in 1 second and would ascend. It is again a time concept involved in it. It's a way that we go. It's the way of life that we go. Therefore, shows step-by-step development. So when the Christ comes to us and begins really to overcome step-by-step what is unlike God within us, then naturally something happens. Then what is the outcome of it? Now, Christianity, we know, is the outcome of the Christ idea. And so the outcome of it as Christianity is shown in marriage. Namely, that through that spiritual unity, we become one with the whole universe, so to say. As the Christ comes to each one of us and to the universe and begins to overturn and overturn in the universe and in us, so that the right idea is being born to us, that means that more and more the universe gets a higher tone. So we have it here, spiritual unity in God. What does it do now as an effect, as Christianity? It brings forth a higher humanity. Naturally, this is very logical, because the Christ has said, the Christ overcomes step by step that which is not God-like in us. Therefore, that which is God-like in us becomes more and more, higher and higher, bigger and bigger, greater and greater. And you get the comparative sense. Well, the moment something becomes better and better, that is a higher humanity. That is not the idea man. The idea man is the end of it, the climax of it. It's the superlative, man's coexistence with God. So we feel here that through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, if we really imbibe the whole tonality, the whole message of prayer and atonement and Eucharist, that that is that principle behind marriage which gives a higher humanity, which improves our state of things. So only these three steps have to be seen at the moment very clearly, so that we begin to realize that we are not only united with God, but that we are united with the whole universe of God. You know, in the prose work, Mrs. Eddy defines, for instance, God as the sum total of the universe. And this is defining God from the standpoint of Christianity. That when we define God not from the world standpoint, not from the Christ standpoint, but from the Christianity standpoint, then he is the God of the universe, the God of hosts, the God of the whole universe. And therefore the sum total of the universe is then that which defines God. So this is the reason why in this epitome in marriage I have not written spiritual unity with God. See, as I did in prayer. Prayer was to bring us into unity with God. Then I went out from that with God in atonement and Eucharist and said, man's unity with God. But now it is not man's unity with God, it's now man's unity with the universe of God. Namely, with all the spiritual qualities that have been now brought out in the human, and we have a higher humanity. So it's a sum total of the universe that is described here, and therefore I've written it's our spiritual unity in God, meaning in the universe of God. So we are one with the universe of God, not just with God. And this I try to epitomize with the term in. So that spiritual unity in God, which means that we are one with all the spiritual and divine qualities of God, that we are one with that which constitutes a spiritual, harmonious, joyous universe, that that is that which brings forth a higher humanity. That's the point I wanted to bring out here. Now, we can put this away for quite a while and perhaps take now the epitome book. So, we turn to the epitome book on marriage and consider together first those epitomes, the main tone epitomes, leaving out the subtone epitomes. Therefore, we only consider that which is printed in bold letters. We had there first in bold letters that, so to say, a resume of what marriage means, namely spiritual unity in God brings forth a higher humanity. We had that before. Now, this is, so to say, a scientific title for the term marriage. Marriage is not really a metaphysical idea, because under marriage can be understood quite a lot. So if we translate marriage into a metaphysical chapter title of the chapter, we could perhaps say what is presented here is the spiritual unity in God, which brings forth a higher humanity. Now, within that title, you have the three scriptural notes, principle, life, and truth. The scriptural notes said first, principle, there must be unity, union. You remember how we did it yesterday? And therefore, the highest unity that to which the whole chapter drives towards is spiritual unity, but in God, not with God. In God, which means to be one with all those qualities that God has, being one, as we will see, being one and finding one's oneness with all the ideas of mind and spirit, not the ideas, the qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That is implied there with spiritual unity in qualities of mind, in qualities of spirit, in qualities of soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So that's principle unity. Then we have seen the second is life, namely bringing forth something higher. In life we always had that exaltation. And the third one is truth, namely an exaltation of what? Very definitely always focusing on humanity. No matter in which way humanity is brought out, as husband and wife, as parent and children, as companionship, friendship, society, civilization, human race, or whatever it is. All that which has to do with mankind. So can you see this epitome is not just a nice term, a nice sentence, but it is a scientific statement of the scriptural note, giving, so to say, a title to the chapter. If we take that and say, now, the whole chapter elaborates on that basic idea, on that basic tone, then we would have to see that instead of God, we can put the synonymous term, and because it is unity in the synonymous term, we will have to stress those qualities that characterize the synonymous term and see how a unity with the characteristic qualities of a synonymous term, how that brings forth something higher, and that higher gives a higher sense of manhood. If we get that rhythm, we really have found the key to the whole chapter, because we will see how in every one of the seven subjects, Mrs. Eddy will bring out unity, then that it brings forth something higher, or something improved, something more lasting, the comparative sense, and then a kind of manhood, a specific kind of manhood. All right, let's see step by step how she has done that. So we read only those epitomes that are printed in bold letters. So we have first our spiritual unity in mind. So that's the principal aspect of it, the unity. Now it's the synonymous term mind. And now we have to see what ideas of mind are under consideration, with which we have to be one, namely spiritual unity in mind assures through being law-abiding. Law-abiding is what? Is mind. So being law-abiding and advanced, can you hear life advanced? An advanced civilization. Civilization, man. Gives a description of man. So you have really here a statement, or even I could say a law, that says, in the measure as we are one with qualities of mind, like law-abiding, that has an effect of life, namely, it is advancing, and not going back, not destroying, but advancing life, what the whole civilization, which is a kind of man. Yes? In the same rhythm, you have spirit. There are other qualities under consideration, namely the qualities of spirit, so that we see spiritual unity in spirit, and now enriches, that's life, the human nature, that's truth. So you have grammatically first, really the unity principle enriches life, human nature, truth. Through what qualities of spirit? Through the union of pure qualities. So you can see perhaps if I had used another grammar style, I could have said, like in the one above, I could have said, well, through spiritual unity in principle, through the union of pure qualities, and I would have put right away the qualities of spirit, that enriches the human nature. So we can see here the second subject will tell us something about unity of spiritual qualities, that if they unite and if they blend, that brings out a higher tone, that enriches our human nature. Or if we go to soul, you have the same rhythm again. Spiritual unity in soul, that's the unity principle, promotes, you hear the tone of life. Now, through what qualities of soul? Through selflessness and unity of interest. If we know our ideas of soul, we know that ideas of soul are selflessness, are identity of interest. These are the qualities of soul. And so through that spiritual unity in soul, namely through selflessness and unity of interest, that promotes the happiness of human partnership. And you have promotes life, human partnership is truth.